The recordings have been started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 11th of June, 2014. On the call today, we have Phil Karnofsky, Ann Aikman, Tom Barrett, Michael Graham, Nick Steinbeck, Chuck Gomes, J. Scott Evans, Alan Greenberg, and joining us shortly will be Olivier Kwame. We have apologies from Cheryl Langdon Orr. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, Steve Chan, Mary Wong, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you.
Thank you very much. This is Chuck Gomes, and I will be chairing the meeting today. So I welcome all of you to the call. And the agenda is posted on the right in Adobe Connect. Let me ask very quickly if there's anybody who is not in Adobe Connect. If so, would you please speak up?
Chuck, it's Ann Aikman Scalise. I'm not in Adobe.
Okay. Thanks, Ann. And we're glad you're on. So feel free to speak up when you want to get in the queue.
Thank you.
And that way, and then I'll fit you into the queue like that. Okay. Our main objective today is to continue where we left off 2 weeks ago in Deliverable 1A review chart, which is on the screen. And we had, I think, covered the first three columns of that, which was the implementation review team column, column one, the special treatment issues review team, or excuse me, special trademark, the print's very small on what I'm looking at here, special trademark issues review team column, and then the third column, formation and work of the Red Cross and International Olympic Committee drafting team. And what we did is we mainly talked about strengths and weaknesses of those, and we're going to do that for each of the columns and try to get through that today. And before we jump to the fourth column, which is the GNSO Council responses to the IGO protections issue, does anybody have any additional comments on the first three columns, especially with regard to strengths or weaknesses? Okay, not hearing anyone. Let's jump right in and go to the fourth column with regard to the PDP that happened. It wasn't just IGO protections. It actually included the Red Cross and specifically, which is, and the IOC. Which are INGOs, so it included both IGOs and INGOs, and specific recommendations came out of that group. Does anybody need a review of that particular working group before we jump to some strengths and weaknesses? We can go through that. You can also look at it yourself in the column there. Speak up if you'd like some review, or if you have some questions before we start talking about strengths and weaknesses. Okay, not seeing any there. You can see in the, if you drop down to the strong points, let's start there. And the strong points listed were broad participation and thorough vetting of the issues. By the way, that I think that was my opinion. If you disagree with that, please speak up, okay? There was better understanding by some parties of how the GNSO process works. And expert involvement and advice on status of international law. That was a task we asked the GNSO General Counsel, the board, ICANN General Counsel to do for us, and they provided some information there. Any questions or disagreement that those were not strong points on that particular working group for those that may be familiar with it. Or a question if you're not sure why we have listed those as strong points. Any other strong points that anyone would like to add for that effort? Okay. Let's switch over to weak points. There was Olivia, did you have something to say?
Oh, no, thank you.
Okay. The first one listed there is that there was no GAC direct participation. And for the most part, that's a weak point in everything we do. And fortunately, the GNSO Council and the GAC are working together to see how we can improve that situation. It's not our job to do that, but that's a common weak point in just about everything we do in the GNSO. The second weak point is that there was a perception that some parties went in noting that they had won and stopped trying to change that, believing that there were prior assurances from other parties which made discussions very difficult and not in line with reality, or a view that everyone else just didn't understand international law. So let me translate that a little bit just in case it helps anybody, and then I'll give it to Marika. Because the board had taken some action in an interim basis and responded affirmatively to certainly the Red Cross and the IOC and subsequently the IGOs, there was an impression that they thought the working group wasn't even needed, that it was a done deal. And that's kind of what's being talked about there as a weakness. And as a participant in that working group, I would, in my opinion, say that that was a weak point. And the way that all came about, I think we successfully got beyond that, but it is something we had to work on in that working group. Marika, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just a general note in relation to your comment on GAC involvement or participation, and that may be an issue where the working group at this stage just wants to make a note of that the discussions that are going on early engagement are specifically focused on the GNSO PDP. However, if the working group comes up with an alternative mechanism or procedure by which the council could develop advice or guidance or whatever form it may take, that may be an area as well that would need some consideration as to how other SOs or ACs may want to have an input on that, feedback on it, or whether that is not appropriate at that stage. So just thought that would maybe something that we may want to take a note of, and as we look at an alternative mechanism, whether that is something that needs to be factored in and possibly looking as well at what is coming out of the conversation between the GNSO and the GAC on how early engagement can be ensured in the context of the PDP process.
Good point. And I think it's fair to assume that, this is Chuck again, it's fair to assume that we can, whatever we talk about can probably apply to either a PDP or a less formal non-consensus policy process like guidance or something like that. Let's jump to Greg.
Hi, Greg Shatton, also a participant in that working group. And I think another weakness was a relative lack of INGO participation. And we had the ISO, International Standards Organization, was there, and then we had, the and that was really about the only one, I think, who participated regularly, maybe Universal Postal Union, but that's, I think, an IGO and not an INGO. And there was also, I think, both a lack of participation and kind of a late arrival to the group. And I think another weakness was that some members were, not in there to do the work of the working group as a whole, but solely – to work on, you know, the kind of issue points that they were kind of hired to deal with. I know we all come to working groups with some point of view, open-minded or not, but I think most people who come, even if they're coming to, you know, represent the interests of a particular party or point of view, also, you know, get down into the rest of the work of the working group. And I think that was by and large true of this group, but I think there were some participants who were kind of like one issue candidates in a sense. They were kind of one issue participants, and if it wasn't their issue, then they weren't giving anything to the work of the group.
Yeah, that's a good observation. Thanks, Greg. Both of those are good. Now, with regard to the INGO participants, technically I think the Red Cross and the IOC are also INGOs, but I think your point's still valid that they were the only INGOs, and there are lots of INGOs out there.
Right, and also the Red Cross and IOC were coming in with a kind of a long track record of working with ICANN, and really I think they were more concerned with their sui generis position than with kind of linking their position and interest with other INGOs. I think they, to some extent, more interested in distinguishing themselves from the other INGOs than in finding common ground with them.
Yeah, this is Chuck again, and I think that, in my opinion, that was more true of one of them than it was the other. The other was participating a little more broadly. I don't know
if
it's necessary to identify which one's which. Thanks.
And I think the last weakness that I would mention, this kind of harks back to some of the earlier discussion by others, was the utter and complete disconnect between the work the GAC was doing at the same time on the same subject matter and the work that we were doing. And that is, you know, still a problem really up to the present day in terms of how the board is dealing with kind of GAC and GNSO both, you know, giving policy items. I use the word items because that has no meaning in ICANN land. Giving policy items to the board on the same subject at different times with different results. And I've so far found the board's viewpoint on how to deal with that unsatisfactory. But I think that a lot of that could have been solved if there was some kind of coordination or methodology for, you know, bringing the two together, or at least, you know, recognizing this wasn't kind of some sort of race to see who could, you know, finish policy first and thereby be kind of the incumbent with policy. And I think it was, you know, this whole, I've nicknamed it policy clash issue, I think undermined the whole working group and its results, and that continues to echo. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Chuck again. And that's another really good observation, because I'm in total sync with you on that. And I like the fact that you didn't just attribute it to the GAC. It was the board as well. That's very good. Thanks. Let's go to Jay Scott.
My comment is, Greg has said a lot of what I was going to say. It's really with regards to the last point, and that is, in my view, with this and some of the other things, there's just this huge amount of procedural confusion. Nobody can tell you, you know, what the procedure is, what the effect of the work is going to be, you know, whether we're required to, because I know if you talk to members of the GAC, they would tell you that clearly in answer to Greg's question, they trump everybody and they don't have to reach consensus. So there's this whole idea of nobody really understands and has explored or explained how it all fits together and what those ramifications are. And I think it's an overall procedural confusion. Nobody knows.
Jay Scott, let me ask you a question. It's Chuck again. Do you think that the way the board handled this, amplified that confusion?
I am almost certain that if you talk to board members, they are as confused, if not more confused, than most people. And I do not mean that as a criticism. Mm-hmm. I mean that as a reality. That everyone in this organization owns. It's not placing blame on anyone. It's because we have failed to have this as an open, honest discussion.
Now, one more question. Chuck asking it again, J. Scott. Do you think that that confusion applies to the participants in the working group process as well, in the GNSO?
I think there can be tremendous confusion on the part of the working group as to what effect the outcomes of their work have and what the ultimate resolution, how their work figures into the ultimate resolution.
Thank you. I think those are great comments. That I think we're going to be able to derive from a lot of the stuff that we're coming up with. It'll help us in our recommendations. Well said. Alan, you're next.
Thank you. Two things, and they're not really comments so much about that working group, but lessons that I think we need to take forward, and I'm not quite sure where they fit, but they fit as a result of the issues that we've they come up as a result of the issues we've been discussing. The first is the issue of, I don't remember what Greg called them, you know, one-issue people, people who are there not to generate good policy on behalf of ICANN, but to meet their particular needs and targets.
So if I can jump in, Alan, as we go here. So that's very similar to what Greg said, I think.
Well, I haven't said anything yet.
Well,
I'm just saying I want to talk about it. I think it's a fact. What Greg said is indeed a fact, and I'm agreeing that there were people who took that position. However, I suspect as we get into things that are going to be more controversial and we have a structure which allows people to come and essentially fight for what they want, we're going to see more of that. And I think the processes that we come up with have to acknowledge that existence and perhaps need to change the ground rules a little bit. Because I think it's fine for people to be there to meet their ends. What we also saw, however, was almost an intolerance that if the group wasn't agreeing with them, that the group was wrong, and that generated a whole lot of tension. But I think the existence of people like that is going to increase. It's one of the results of completely open membership into working groups and talking about issues that are going to be of interest to them, both financial and otherwise. So I think we have to remember that as we go along, and not see it and not treat it purely as an ill we have to fix, but understand it's a situation we're going to have to deal with.
Good points. Anything else?
Yeah. The now I'm trying to remember what it is. Give me a second. It's completely skipped my mind now. Go on to someone else, and we'll come back.
Okay, we'll do.
I hope.
Thanks, Alan. This is Chuck again. Greg, you're up.
Kind of going, following up on what Alan had to say, I was reading an analysis of kind of ICANN working groups and policy that Sam Lanfranco, who's in the NPOC, wrote. And he had an interesting name for those of us who may have come here with an issue or a viewpoint, but have somehow gotten subsumed into doing work that goes beyond the scope of our narrow initial reason for participating in ICANN. And he called it the Good Samaritans. And I think that there are a number of folks, and I think probably everyone on this group, in this group, just by joining this group, would probably fall into the Good Samaritan category. But I think that was an issue, was that some people there were very vividly did not have any kind of Good Samaritan aspect to their participation in the group. I have nothing against enlightened self-interest, but just naked one-issue activity and that kind of opposition, both an opposition and also never kind of picking up any of the neutral work of the group, whether it's taking notes or dealing with something that's purely ministerial, that's not an issue, so to speak. All of that I think is troublesome, and I agree with Alan that we need to find a way forward when we're dealing with policy issues to insist, in a sense, that even if you're coming for the feast, that you also have to wash some dishes as well.
Thanks, Greg. And just a follow-up on that, kind of a question, I guess. And I guess it's more of a follow-up than a question, but it seems to me that we're going to, like Alan said, we're going to have the one-issue people, and we need to, accept that and deal with it. But one of the things I saw as a problem by certain one-issue people is that they kept repeating the same stuff over and over again. And so it was not constructive. We heard them the first time, and maybe second time's okay, but hearing the same stuff over and over again as if the rest of us were all ignorant was not very constructive. And I'll stop there, and let's go back to Alan. I think he remembered.
Yeah, thank you. On that subject, we'll stay for a second. The point I was making was that I don't think we can do what Greg just said, that is, insist they wash dishes too. I think we are going to have those people, and we need to set ground rules as to how they participate. And I think one of them, Chuck, you hit on right now. Just because you haven't gotten your way yet doesn't mean you get to say the same thing over and over and over and over again. That's not the way we want anyone to behave on a working group, and certainly not those who are espousing a very particular and personal position. So that's the kind of thing I think that I was talking about when we said we need to have ground rules and acknowledge that there are going to be people like that in our working groups, and we need to know how to handle them. So, I don't think we have any answers, but I think that's the kind of issue that we're going to have to confront. The other issue I forgot, and it's a vague one. This working group had perhaps, with the exception of vertical integration, are the only ones I can remember that had really complex problems with multiple answers that could not coexist. We could not find common ground because there were always people pushing for the endpoints. And I'm one of those people who believes that if the PDP is truly working, coming to a deadlock situation is not an acceptable outcome because it just punts the situation to the board. And somehow we have to start thinking more about how we make PDPs work to address these kind of difficult situations. And again, no answers, and maybe the PDP itself can't, but it needs to pass on wisdom to the board or to the GNSO or whatever. And again, these really difficult PDPs, which have real problems coming to an endpoint, I think are the ones that we need to focus on as we build ground rules going forward, because those are the hard ones. The easy ones we know we can do already. I'm not sure that's really clear, but the best I can do at the moment. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck again, and it's clear to me, I think, and I'm going to throw something out as an example, and some of you may totally disagree with me on this, and that's perfectly okay. But I and this happens to deal with an issue that a lot of the work happened before we got to the current PDP, and that's related to who is. And everybody, I think, knows the log jam we've had for 10, 12 years on very much progress and who is. In my certainly very personal opinion, the use of the expert working group may be an example of how to address, just one example, of how to address very complex problems. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to look at their work, either in their final report or some of the stuff they did earlier. But, Alan, I relate very much to what you're saying, as that may be one sort of an example of how we may deal with very, very complex and controversial problems. And there's a lot of work still to do on that, but that's why I think that you're onto something there. If we can come up with ways like that that may help break the logjam, or maybe just help us discover that there's no compromise that'll work, that might help. Thanks, Alan. I like what you said there. Is your hand still up?
No, that's a new hand,
okay.
Triggered by what you just said. If I can translate what you just said with regard to the expert working group, which is going to be followed by a PDP,
right,
is that perhaps sometimes we jump into a PDP to come up with the answer when we're not ready for it yet.
Well said.
And there may be an interesting lesson there.
Yes.
That certainly was the case with vertical integration. We wanted an answer so bad and so quickly that we started a PDP. And, you know, we weren't ready for it. We may never have been ready for it, but we certainly weren't at that point. So
That's an interesting lesson. It is. Thank you. Okay. So this has been a great discussion on this. Any other weak points or anything else anybody wants to add on this particular column? And as I think everybody realizes, the real value in talking about, especially the weak points, is probably the lessons learned. Well, it applies to the strong points as well, but lessons learned that we can then translate into principles. And so this is going exactly where I think it's useful for us in terms of our tasks. Okay. If there's nothing else on that one, let's go to the next column.
Chuck, it's Ann. I'm sorry for all the noise.
That's okay. Go ahead.
May I ask a question about lessons learned? Is there a category on the chart for that? I'm trying to remember. I looked at it yesterday, but that was a great discussion, and it was really interesting to hear all the comments that were made, and I'm wondering if there's anywhere to capture those lessons learned.
Marika, do you think that we should add a row underneath the weak points that would be lessons learned, or you think we can capture that in other ways?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think we're already capturing as part of the notes, and you know, please feel free as well to add or tell me if I've captured something wrong, because for some of them, I think I've already tried to put in brackets some of the, you know, the ideas that came out as well of you know, what we should be thinking of. And we've also started capturing some of the notes here in the pod that we can also integrate here or in the actual template itself. So I think we're trying to do it, but I guess at some point, or at least I think once we've gone through this exercise of all the pros and cons, I guess what we may want to do is try to draw from that. Okay, so indeed, what are the lessons learned, or what are some of the basic principles that we would need to take into account devising this, you know, guidance or advice process? You know, what are the pros, or what are the things we should do more of, and what are the things we should do less of, basically?
And this is Chuck again. Anne, does that work for you? Or do you think we should add a lessons learned row? I'm not advocating one way or the other, but feel free to speak up on that.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. It may actually be worth worth noting as we go through these, you know, in the notes, lessons learned, colon, and then trying to summarize some of the things that people said. And if when people are reviewing minutes, if we don't agree with that particular, you know, summary of lessons learned, we can comment on the minutes accordingly. But it seems as though it would be great to have a way to outline those principles of lessons learned in a really concrete manner that would inform the formation of, you know, any sort of policy guidance process going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Much appreciated. So I think I heard the suggestion to add a row. Is that okay, Marika? Don't worry about in all of your notes transferring them right now. We can take care of
that. Yeah, this is Marika. I actually thought that Anne just said that we should mark it, and what I started doing is doing exactly so, like a kind of lesson learned in the notes, and after that the kind of, okay, well, so what did we learn, or what are we suggesting we may be doing? So I started doing that, so I don't know if that still needs another row, or just by marking it like that, we are capturing it the same way.
Yeah, my original suggestion, Chuck, was to do exactly what you said, to add a row in the chart, but I heard Marika Chubb pushing back on that and saying that she didn't really think that was workable, so I don't know, you know, just however folks want to do it, it's okay with me.
We can definitely add an additional row if people prefer that, and that's not an issue. It's more that it's then, by doing the lesson learned, you can immediately link it to what, you know, the point is that triggered that lesson learned. Otherwise, you have it separately. But either way, you know, we can easily add an additional row. That's no issue at all.
So this is Chuck. So let's go ahead and proceed this way. Unless, but we may still come back and want to add a row, because I think that's okay. Anne, it sounded like you were going to say something.
Oh, just I would go with whatever the group feels as far as, you know, the adding the row. Question. Sometimes things in notes tend to get lost, and so I'd probably favor adding the row for lessons learned, because then you can assign the lesson learned to the discussion on the particular policy process that was followed. So it might, you know, provide a better context to connect it to that particular discussion, like in this case to the RCIOC and, you know, NGO discussion, lessons learned from that particular process. That was the reason I suggested putting it in a chart, but I don't know how others feel. So,
this is Chuck, does anybody else want to comment on that? Do you have a preference one way or the other? Marika, is that a new hand?
This is Marika. This is actually a hand that related to another comment I wanted to make. Not to
this
issue.
So. Go ahead.
No, my other comment was actually coming back to the point that Alan had made on, you know, we sometimes dive too quickly into PDPs, you know, without actually being ready for it. And I think there are several examples of PDP where actually I think from a staff perspective, we said, do some more data gathering, do some more discussion first, let's not rush into it. But we were basically completely overruled, and you know, the council went ahead and initiated anyway. Also, you know, the PDP manual specifically provides for that kind of forum of having, you know, some conversations first, think it through, you know, make sure you have enough data before you actually move into, you know, requesting an issue report or the next phase. But it is one of the areas I think that's indeed very little used or known. And, you know, as you said, maybe the expert working group is an alternative way of looking at it, but definitely flexibility in the PDP to do those kind of things, you know, within the framework we currently have.
Thank you, Marika. Alan, go ahead.
You know, Marika's right. There are processes we could use, but we generally don't. And if you look at both of the cases that I gave as examples, and I'll come back to yours in a moment, Chuck, they were both things where we were under the gun to come up with an answer. You know, in both cases, the GTLD program is about to launch or is about to be finished or whatever, and we need answers, and we need answers fast. And that's problematic, and, you know, it's also part of the world that things happen and you can't control them or everything around you. But nevertheless, I think we have to understand why it happened, and maybe we'll learn something from it. Who is another good example, but look at what we did. We decided after the last Who Is fiasco, the PDP fiasco, that is, that we would now do some studies so we understood the issue. 7 years later, we've now decided the studies are done, which happens to coincide with the expert working group, which was launched completely parallel to it. You know, so that's a case where we did decide to do other things first, and we pushed the subject off for 7 years. That's not probably considered an ideal situation either. But maybe we'll learn. Thank you.
Thanks. Now, Alan, Chuck again, should we put rushed answers? That was my shorthand for that. As a lesson learned?
Well, if you look at all three cases so far, we have not had a PDP conclude which ended up with the definitive answer with a bow tied around it. The vertical integration ended effectively in stalemate and punted the issue. Who is? We're still playing through that story. And on the IGO protection, we ended up with a partial set of things that we could compromise on, but were not a cohesive set of overall, you know, recommendations. It wasn't a self-contained policy as we would normally think about it. So I don't know what to say. We have a lot to learn. Maybe we're never going to be able to do this kind of difficult thing. But that's the world we're looking in right now.
Okay, I'd like to move ahead to the board request for GNSO to consider defensive registrations. And let me start with a general question like I did on the previous one. Is there anybody that needs some background information on this beyond what is included in that column already? So we're in column 5. Not hearing or seeing anyone. I noticed that we don't have any strong points listed for this one. Is that because we don't have anybody that was very actively involved in that, or maybe just not having the time to suggest any, in fact, suggest any strong points on that one? Marika, please.
Yeah, this is Marika. The reason probably why there's nothing here is that the council basically didn't do anything. This is one of the items where there was a specific board request, and the staff tried to, you know, I think, do a bit of the issue scoping, or at least, you know, provide some guidance on what were the areas the council could be looking at. I think we had it on the action list for quite some time, but there was really no one actually willing or interested, it seemed, to do anything about it. So as a result, I think at some point after it was on the list for, I would even say, and I need to look back when the request was made, the request was originally made in April 2012, and then eventually, I think, on October 2013, they formally decided, you know, after staff encouragement, to say, look, is there still something we should leave on the project list or not, to actually say, no, we're not going to do anything about it, and let's remove it from the project list. So I'm not really sure, indeed, what the pros and cons of it are, but it's indeed interesting to hear from, I think, those that at least were aware of that request, why they believe, you know, nothing actually happened. And, you know, despite it being a board request for input.
Thank you. That's very helpful information, Marika. Chuck speaking again. Is there anything we can learn from that exercise or lack of exercise? Is this then maybe an example that we should delete from our list? Greg?
Oh, I wouldn't delete it, because I think the fact that it failed in a sense, or that it never kind of got out of the gate, is itself a lesson learned. I think probably need to zero in more specifically on why it didn't get out of the gate, also why the board initiated the question, and I think this goes back to one of the I hope for goals of this working group, which is to develop guidelines for lightweight policy guidance from the GNSO, either by way of coordination by the GNSO Council, or, and I don't favor this, by the GNSO Council kind of acting on its own, and so this is in essence a request made for which there is no proper response methodology, which is, I think, and maybe part of the lesson learned is if there isn't a way to respond, not as likely to get a response as well.
Okay. Thank you. Mary, please.
Thanks, Chuck. And following up on Greg's points and reasons, I think we listed this because one of the things we started off with was to try and get a sense of the range, diversity, and type of requests that come into the GNSO, whether from the board or some other body. So I'm with Greg. I think that we could retain this, and maybe the group can consider some further comments along the lines of what he suggested, but we might want to retain this just for thoroughness at the very least.
Chuck, it's Ann. Could I get in the queue on this one?
You're in.
Thank you. I wonder if we should be considering some what I call quality service type standards in relation to requests from the board to the GNSO, such as, time limits for when GNSO responds one way or the other to the board for such a request, saying we're working on it, or we need the following additional information, or something that in the world of, say, customers, if the GNSO in particular wants to increase its influence on, how the board makes policy, and if the board sends such a request, I think any kind of streamlined process should potentially include some timeframes for responding.
Well, Ann, let me ask you a question as Chuck, and with regard to that, because as Alan has pointed out, he pointed out some examples of cases where there was a time limit, and it didn't work still. So do you think that, in a multi-stakeholder bottom-up environment, time limits become fairly challenging, and especially when you consider everybody's very busy. In some cases, there are just not resources available to, and so people end up picking topics that are higher priority and not spending time on the other one. So how do you react to the idea of the suggestion of time limits, in that in some cases where there have been short time limits, it didn't seem to work?
Well, I think that they would be more in the nature of guidelines or goals than they would be, limits. And I guess maybe I'm speaking specifically about if the board generates a request for guidance from GNSO Council or from GNSO, that it's appropriate to, provide some sort of response so that we don't get, well, we sent that out to GNSO and they never responded. and I do think it's really difficult in terms of how to juggle priorities, but I also think there should be some sort of logging process whereby the request coming from the board for input on a question like that, you know, gets logged and followed up on a regular, at least goals for time frames for some kind of response. Here's the status of, you know, the board request to GNSO for input on X issue, and maybe even like a chart, you know, kept on that. Now maybe staff, you know, already just keep such a chart, but I don't know that it's at the top of mind of GNSO chair, for example, to have those things be documented and you know, develop goals for responding to the board with policy issues.
Thank you, Ann. This is Chuck. Before I go to Alan and Greg, so I think you came up maybe with a lesson learned with regard to this one. Let me try it and see if you agree. Your log and response comment, in this particular case, because it dragged out a long time, that might actually be a lesson learned from this particular effort, even though it didn't go anywhere. Did I say that correctly?
Yes. Yes. And it's not to say that one has to give an answer within a certain, you know, hard time frame, and you've got to have the answer, and here, you know, and you got to deliver it in 30 days. It's to say, you know, let's log that request from the board, because that's important, because GNSO makes policy, you know, and so let's figure out how we're going to get a status report back on that request within hopefully a goal time frame, and you know, keep monitoring that on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you very much,
Chuck. Could I respond?
Yes, you may.
Yes, so this is Marika. So that's actually something we are already actively doing. You know, one mechanism is the project list, which you know, we update on a monthly basis and send to the GNSO Council, which clearly flags, you know, which open or outstanding items there are for council action. And you know, this was one of the specific items that was on there every month, but still didn't really trigger any response, including as well, you know, the anticipated, I think, deadline by the board. But we also similarly do that for, you know, items that are maybe not projects per se, but specific, you know, council or board requests for input. We track those in the GNSO Council action list that's posted on the wiki page, and which is also reviewed at the start of every council meeting and serves as well as a reminder. So in that sense, I think that does really work as a reminder of which are some of the open items that, you know, the council is expected to provide input on. So that triggers normally as well a kind of decision of, are we going to provide input? And if so, how are we going to do it? And if not, let's decide that we're not doing it and indeed take it off our list or respond to whoever asked for it and, you know, close that item. So I think indeed from the defense of registrations, I think we've already, you know, come a long way, at least to not have things linger on for so long, but actually kind of force the council to make a decision on whether or not to do something. So I think Anne's point is very well taken, but I think it's actually something that we're already doing and is showing its effect by closing out items and also being able, I think, for the council to be more responsive on some of the requests we've had for either you know, comments or input or feedback on certain items, whether it's from the board or other groups that operate within ICANN.
Thank you,
Chuck. Yeah, Chuck, it's Ann. I do have a comment on that.
Go ahead, Ann.
I think that staff is very conscientious, and it doesn't surprise me, but they are alerting council to various action items at various times and before every meeting. But here we're actually talking about potentially constructing a process that very loosely might be called, you know, policy guidance, that just might have its own framework and own set of, you know, time frames and really exists independently of staff's responsibilities. But, I mean, staff would, of course, comply and communicate in accordance with that framework, but I'm suggesting that it would be appropriate, if we are going to develop an informal sort of policy guidance process, to include time frames for response as goals within that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. And what my suggestion on this one before I go to Alan, sorry, Alan, and Greg and Jay Scott, even though the council and staff has started to do something on this, I think we should still capture it as a lesson learned, and then we can note that they are making progress on this and acknowledge that. But let's go to Alan. Sorry to keep you waiting, Alan.
Now I have to see if I remember what I wanted to talk about, but I actually do this time. Deadlines, rather. We have a very mixed history with deadlines being set by the board or whoever it is that gives us a task. At times, it has been a very effective tool to get people to focus on an issue and come up with an answer. Usually, if there's a threat that goes along with the not meeting the time delay, the time deadline. We have also had some spectacular failures because of not only the delays, but the way in which they were enacted, and in at least one case, the way in which they were a moving target that kept on being changed. Targets and deadlines, I think, in general, are a good thing of focusing the mind. They have to be reasonable, and they have to be done in a reasonable manner, though. And that's harder to enforce. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Let's go to Greg.
Hi, it's Greg Shatton. This is not about time limits, but going back to the issue of the board request to GNSO to consider the defensive registration issue. And I'm trying to furiously, play catch-up ball, both refreshing my recollection and doing some research while we're having this discussion to see what was kind of going on at that time. And it's clear that what was going on at that time and which kind of maybe preempted the GNSO's council's consideration of the defensive registration question was that the straw man proposal was working its way through the whatever process the straw man proposal worked its way through, and that included discussion of or possible resolutions for dealing with the defensive registration issue, such as the limited preventive registration, which was ultimately not adopted. So I think that there was kind of a things were happening on parallel tracks, which I think one lesson to be learned from that is that there's issues will bob to the surface regardless of what action or inaction the GNSO council takes on them, and whether that's good or bad is obviously, up for much debate. Indeed, straw man proposal is one of the possible, predicates for this whole policy implementation discussion that NPDP and working group that were involved in. But I think that, perhaps that's why the GNSO Council itself didn't deal with it. I would have to go back and, slog through the listserv or, talk, some of the people around the council at the time would have to kind of discuss why the council never kind of how the council dealt with it, even if they didn't, see it through to a resolution. It certainly was on the agenda and certainly was being talked about. I think there may be, I'm not quite sure what lesson there is to learn from that, but that, a board request to the GNSO council isn't necessarily going to be what ultimately results from an issue kind of being out in the wild. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. And note, I think everybody knows this, that a couple columns ahead of us that we're going to get into the straw man proposal, so we'll get a chance to talk about that in more detail. Let's go to Jay Scott.
I just wanted to put something in both columns. In the strong point column, I think it's strong point that the board actually reached out for guidance, because that's how it's supposed to work. In the weak point, I think failure to provide any response for a prolonged period of time makes the GNSO Council look ineffectual.
Well said.
If I were on Adobe, I would say agree.
Okay, thanks, Ann. Appreciate that. So, and I see Greg's agreeing too. I think probably all of us do. So thanks for that very much. Alan, go ahead.
Sorry, that was an old hat.
Okay. So,
I'll lower it as
anybody,
soon as I
before
find
we move on, does anybody have any other lessons learned or strong or weak points for this item? Okay. Chuck speaking again, and actually I think we got some good things out of this in terms of our objectives. So let's move on then to the next column, which is GNSO feedback on the WHOIS review team final report. And of course, just to refresh everybody, the WHOIS review team was one of the AOC review teams, and does anybody need any more background besides that? Okay. So let's go to, we don't have any strong points listed on this one, nor do we have any weak points. So let's see if we can come up with some right now. Anybody want to start the discussion on that, or including asking questions if you need some clarity on this one? Jay Scott.
The board sought input from the GNSO before taking any action.
Okay.
That's a strong point.
Good. Someone else.
Sorry, I stepped away from a moment. Which one are we on? It's Alan speaking.
We're on the one titled GNSO feedback on who is review team final
okay.
report.
Thank you.
Okay? And we're just looking for some strong points, weak points, lessons learned on that particular effort.
Thank you.
Alan, please.
Well, one of the lessons learned, if we look at how the GNSO handled it, it was less than optimal. We went through that with several iterations, almost inventing what we were going to do along the way, because if you remember correctly, the first potential answer to it was deemed to be quite unsatisfactory by many people because it had a lot of words in it, but it didn't really say how the GNSO or its components felt. Or it said how they felt but didn't attribute it to whom. So you had to play a guessing game almost. So that's perhaps the first time that we ever tried to come up with an output of the GNSO without some formal process. That it was just sort of an ad hoc process and it didn't work real well, and that's not surprising since it was the first time we tried it. I'm not quite sure what the lesson
is. Is that a lesson learned that ad hoc processes may be suspect?
Certainly ad hoc processes require more iterations to get something which is satisfactory.
Okay, that's a good way to say it.
That particular one was, it's awkward in a number of ways to talk about it because the project was also assigned to a brand new counselor who didn't have a lot of experience on council and, you know, perhaps wasn't fully aware of some of the politics and issues. It just made the process harder.
Is that a weak point?
Yes, but I wouldn't want to put that kind of thing in a document. That's not fair.
Okay, all right, that's fine. I understand. Thank you. Greg
Schatt, and I guess and two things. I think we should find a politically correct way to save Alan's last point. I wouldn't want to lose it entirely. By taking the reverse, which is as a lessons learned, which is that it's best when a GNSO counselor, you know, takes on primary responsibility that they're, you know, well-versed in the issues and experienced in council procedures.
And if I may jump in, it's Alan. Perhaps when you're trying to do something on the fly, it's best not to be done by one person.
Yes.
Together, but to assign a group.
Yeah. And I think the larger lesson learned here is, and it goes back to what I said, you know, in the previous column, is that we need to have a non-ad hoc process for lightweight policy guidance, whatever that may be. So a lightweight policy guidance process, and I will add another acronym to the to ICANN, the LPGP. We need an LPGP. Maybe that won't catch on, but I think it's pretty fetch.
Okay. Marika Guest.
Yeah, this is Marika. That's my alter ego there. No, I think exactly to Alan's
Hello,
point.
Are you calling me?
Sorry. I think to Alan's point, and also what Greg tried to translate on, you know, ideally maybe it shouldn't be done by one person, but I think that especially in cases where a topic is deemed pretty controversial or where it's known that there are a lot of different viewpoints, which I think is probably the prime example of that. Because I think in some of the other examples, which we may get to at the later stage of the review chart, I think there were some where there was indeed one pen holder, but either there was indeed sufficient discussion at a council level to have those different viewpoints heard for that person to be able to distill it, or it was an issue that, you know, there was a relatively common viewpoint on it, which, you know, did enable one person to actually hold the pen and, you know, be able to write a response or a first draft that was, you know, broadly accepted by the council. So I think it sometimes depends as well, and it may not be a, you know, one size fits all, that it never should be one person, because reality is as well with many of these things, and it's something I think we see more and more now with, you know, so many things going on, that it's sometimes really hard to actually get more than one person willing to raise a hand to say, I'm happy to prepare a first draft. And, you know, in certain cases, it's staff as well that, you know, tries to help out with that, where ideally, of course, it's, you know, someone in the community that holds that pen and takes a first stab at it. So it's a, I think, you know, again, not one size may fit all, and but in certain cases like this one, I think it's definitely a case where a broader group probably should have been involved in drafting of the first response.
Thank you, Marika. Chuck again. And one observation on my part, and one of the things I've found over the years, is that it's okay in many instances to have one person take a first stab at something, but it's really important to get a few other people to chime in and comment on that before going very far with it. We've got a lot of static coming on. Somebody may need to mute. Let me ask Olavi if he has something to say. Noise is gone. Marika, do you still have your hand up? You do still have your hand up. Did you want it up?
No, I'm taking it down. Sorry.
Thanks. That's all right. We all do it. Okay, anything else on this item on the
Chuck, it's Ann.
Okay,
Ann. I'm sorry, I'm probably the reason for the noise problem, so I try to stay muted as often as possible, but this is a comment related to what Greg said about lightweight policy guidance, and then, you know, we were talking about the number of people involved in analyzing an issue, and I think one of the things that this group is going to have to try to wrestle with is when a request comes from the board, or when, you know, there's a need to react quickly to something that could be considered a policy issue, is it possible to develop any sort of framework for analyzing, you know, just how lightweight a question is this, or is it really a heavy question? Because the controversy that arises, as we all know, is whether GSO Council can comment on it, whether it requires a PDP, and then sort of a whole spectrum of things in between. And so I think one of the challenges facing this working group is is it possible to develop any sort of objective framework to analyze, you know, when such a request requires a PDP and when it does it not require a PDP? Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Appreciate that. Any other comments on the Who Is Review Team feedback? Okay. Then let's at least try to tackle one more. And actually, the next two are kind of related, but so we may not get both of them. But the first one is the development of a trademark clearinghouse straw man proposal, with a comment there that it may be more relevant to consider as a possible model. Marika, can you comment on that, the parenthetical comment there, please?
Yeah, this is Marika, because it's, you know, this is not really anything where the council provided a response on or was asked to do something. I think it's more that this describes a process that was used for developing an implementation of related proposals. So as such, I think we you know, basically flagged that, you know, it's probably different from all the other items that have been listed here, which were specifically, you know, council initiated or at least, you know, council effort to respond, while this was, you know, kind of a different beast in that sense, as, you know, it did use a specific or kind of new approach to trying to come up with, you know, a straw man proposal, you know, which may provide some insight into how, you know, a possible model or process that we're looking at may do, but it, you know, we may need to separate it from some of the other items that specifically look at the ways in which, you know, council organize a response or feedback or input to a specific request.
Thank you. That's really important background. And on this one, we do have some strong points listed and some weak points, so that'll be helpful. Does anybody have any questions before we get into the strong and weak points? Excuse me while I log back in. My screen went blank on me. Back in. Okay, so I don't see any hands, so there are no questions. Let's go over the strong points. One strong point was arguably the first instance of policy implementation development led by a facilitator who was Fadi. And secondly, a bold attempt to bring differing viewpoints together to find solutions to nagging issues, and then an attempt to be less rigid in problem-solving structures. Does anybody want to comment on any of those strong points, including the person who put them in? And we had a couple different people, I think, do that. Including, I think, Jay Scott, a couple of those, I think, were yours recently. Any comments on that? Alan?
Yeah, the strong and weak points were mine, or at least the initial ones were the ones in brown or whatever that color is. I think Marika's right. This is something that we don't necessarily need to focus on to too much an extent. There are lessons, however, and it's interesting. At the time that this was done, we were just starting to discuss things like having professional facilitators or, you know, arbitrators or whatever, negotiators in to help come to closure on PDP discussions. And at that point, when they were mentioned in any public forums, they were largely derided and laughed at. And 2 years later now, or whatever it is, we're now talking about doing this and having budget requests in to allow us to do this if we decide it's necessary. So our thought processes evolve, and things which are jokes one day become next day's reality. So I think there are some lessons learned. It was done in good spirit by Fatty and those who orchestrated it, with some pretty horrible outcomes in terms of how it was perceived by parts of the community. And in fact, this working group is directly traceable to that. So I think we're going to learn things from it. We'll try not to make the same mistakes. I don't know if we need to belabor the issues a lot more than they're already described there.
Thank you, Alan. Any other comments on strong points? Then let's jump ahead to the weak points, and we can always go back to the other one if somebody thinks of something. So composition of the group not balanced, and although remote was not balanced, and then although remote participation was required, it was poorly implemented. Okay, good observation. Purpose and intent was not initially well communicated to the community. Alan?
Yeah, I just want to comment that there's shorthand there that people who weren't involved in the process may not quite understand, and we may want to put more wording, be a bit more verbose. When I said that remote participation was required, that's because these meetings were planned on relatively short notice, and ICANN absolutely refused to fund many of the participants who wanted to participate in it. And we're told if you want to participate, it's remote or nothing, or pay your own airfare and get out here tomorrow, which was not viable for many people.
So Alan, Chuck, again,
that's the code. I'm just saying was, planned on short notice. ICANN did not provide travel funds to many of the interested parties.
Okay.
And, by saying poorly implemented, the from my perception, I was one of those remote participants who sat on the phone for 12 solid hours on one day. The discussions went round robin in the room, and then every once in a while someone said maybe we should look, see if there's any remote participants who have their hands up, who had had their hands up for half an hour at that point. It just wasn't carried out very well.
Okay. Anything else on this item? Strong points, weak points, lessons learned, questions?
Chuck, it's Michael.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, just on the weak point side, and I guess it sort of summarizes some of what I believe were the negative reactions was. It was a process carried out without buy-in from the start. It was sort of imposed rather than developed. And I think that's in part one reason why we are engaged in this discussion right now. So that was one of the two weak points, that it was imposed rather than an organic agreed to or discussed way of approaching it, which, perhaps was necessary at that point, but that was, I think, one of the weaknesses.
Excellent point. So an example of doing it top-down without community buy-in creates some limitations. So thank you, Michael. Any other thoughts on this one?
Chuck, it's Ann. I just had a question.
Sure.
It's sometimes difficult for me personally to understand some issues that seem to come top down in relation to, for example, registry and registrar contracting. Some of the things that come down on that side of things are just as surprising and just as, appear just as top down as the whole straw man thing appears, I think, to the contracted parties. There was a debate for a while, for example, with respect to the whole issue of reserved names and reserved and premium names, and a big discussion about that. And I think that, some of the non-contracted parties may view how that whole issue came down on reserve names as a unilateral issue that maybe should have been a policy issue. But again, I am not familiar enough with those lines to understand when a contract issue actually may involve the greater community from a policy standpoint. So I'm just learning, trying to understand, and raising that example, for discussion.
Thanks, Ann. Chuck, again, and before I go to Greg, if I'm hearing you correctly, I think what you're talking about really is the thrust of what our working group is all about. So we know, for example, with regard to RERS, we have better guidance. I don't know if it'll ever be black and white, but better guidance as to when things should really be handled in a policy process, or at least some mechanisms for making a decision on that, rather than just making an implementation decision. Am I understanding what you said correctly?
Yes, I think so. And I guess it's not surprising, in a way where if folks think, well, they're going to get a better result if they just, pursue it without invoking any sort of, policy process, and if it's a bit of a free-for-all, because otherwise you're going to lose and waive and all this kind of stuff, then that inspires everyone to behave in the same manner, as far as the kind of behind closed doors negotiations or whatever, even though I wouldn't call straw man behind closed doors, but it also was not subject to a policy process. But I tend to, on the from like the IPC side of things, this whole topic of reserve names and how many of them there are is like, wow, how is that not policy? So, but yes, I do, and the status of those names during Sunrise in particular, but yes, I agree with you, trying to determine what really does involve, a policy issue as part of the work of this group, and particularly policy issues under the gun, when we all know that it's not practical to take 2 years to decide an issue of this type. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. And before I go to Marika, and I'm sure she has some insight on this, is the issue of reserve names an example that we should add to our list of things to look at? Maybe I'll start with you, Ann. Did you have a comment on that?
I'd be interested in looking at it, but because I know, for example, that some of the things that we're looking at within INTA's Internet Committee work and, hey, what about these practices with reserved and premium names that are causing, some concerns? It might be worth taking a look at that, how that policy on reserved names developed.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's right. Thank you. Let me jump to Marika, because she may want to comment on that, and then go to Greg and Alan before we make a final decision whether to add that particular topic to our list. Marika, and if people can be fairly brief now, I would like to, before we close our meeting, to talk just a little bit about where we pick up in London, okay?
Yeah, this is Marika. Actually, Chuck, that was exactly the item I was going to flag, that we indeed only have 5 minutes left, and in principle still think four agenda items on the agenda, and most particularly, of course, the agenda for the London meeting. So I just wanted to note that.
Good. Okay, thanks, Marika. We're thinking alike there. Greg.
Hi, it's Greg Schatt, and I guess I was going to comment that another weak point was that there was a perception by some in the community that this was an attempt to reopen a closed item, whether that was true or not. But that was, a weak point, and that may in part have come from the ad hoc nature or the, you know, new nature of how it was brought along. But I think that certainly, didn't help the process as a whole.
Thank you. Okay. And Alan.
Yeah, just a very quick comment. The reserve names have flipped between policy and implementation, if you excuse that expression, over the years many, many times, because names have been added and deleted from contracts without any discussion or policy decisions at all. And it's one of those things that we have flipped back and forth about how we treat it depending on the detailed circumstances and which name it's we're talking about. So if we're going to add it, we're going to have to do some homework and make sure we know what we're talking about. That's all.
Thanks, Alan. Let me ask a very brief question. Does anybody object to us adding policy on reserve names? And Alan's right, we're going to have to probably decide what we're talking about there, but maybe it's with regard to new GTLDs. Anybody object to, at least for now, we can always change our minds later, adding that as an additional column? Not hearing or seeing anybody, let's do that. And let me jump right into the agenda for the face-to-face meeting in London. And, of course, everybody's welcome to participate. But, Jay Scott, since you're going to be leading it, feel free to jump in yourself. And it seems to me that one of the things we could do, and then I'll jump to you, Marika, is pick up right where we left off here. If we add reserve names, we'll have six more issues to deal with and deal with strong and weak points and lessons learned. And so that's certainly one thing we can do. But let me jump over to Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just was trying to get clarification on what you wanted to add. I hear you now say reserve names, but when did the council take
reserve names for new GTLDs? Anne, would that be okay?
But is that a PDP or was that a council?
It was really, I think, I recall various discussions on this issue where one time the number of reserve names should be limited, and then there was discussion back and forth in different, I guess they were conference calls with GTLD program head or something, and people were weighing in, hey, you know, we've always had the ability to reserve names, and then others were saying, but now we have this trademark clearinghouse procedure and Sunrise and the value of entering, what's the value of entering your mark, and a lot of discussion about, what would be the effect of reserve names on the Sunrise holders' rights, and then I think the whole thing just kind of got resolved, but I don't recall any, you know, particular policy discussions on it other than that the way it came down was unlimited reserve names.
Yeah, so this is Marika. It would be really helpful then if you can send us the information, because it's still not clear to me how this was a request to the GNSO or a response to the GNSO provided. So I'm not really clear how it actually fits in this table. But Anne, if you can send us the information, we can see how to best fit that in.
Well, I think the question is, you know, does policy get made even if no request is sent to the GNSO? And the straw man solution, for example, and the reason I raise it here is an example where no request, as far as I know, was sent to the GNSO. But, and you're saying that belongs in our chart. And so, you know, but it's not because the request was sent to the GNSO that the chart, you know, it's not a condition that a request was sent to the GNSO, is it?
Well, I said if you can provide the information, we can include it and the working group can, you know, discuss it. I'm not aware of what you're talking about, so it's hard for me to find the information. But if you have it, we just add it and you know, let the working group discuss.
Yeah, Chuck, this is Michael.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, as Alan said, and I think, you know, there's a history of this and it's coming various times in various ways, and to help both our focus and, as Marika's asking, perhaps you could take the time. It's going to take some research, and perhaps you need to pull together a couple of other people within the work group, but to look at the various ways that this has happened in the past, how it's occurred, whether it's just fiat lux or if there's been a request and a discussion, but to put that together, and then we can look at those various ways and perhaps say these worked, these didn't. But I see Marika's trying to get us focused because, you know, it's something we need to define how these things happen, even if they weren't requests to the GNSO. So I guess that's the research and the investigation that Alan was referring to.
Thank you, Michael. And, Greg, I'll come to you in just a second. I wasn't actively involved in that particular issue, but I really believe it was were some implementation decisions that were made with regard to reserve names, just to give my perspective on what I think the context is. Okay, and I see Greg's hands down. So anybody object to us? Obviously, we're going to talk. We already mentioned the fact that in London we will put a draft project schedule in front of people, talk about that briefly, but just make it a working meeting, and there will be remote access where we pick up where we left off on the correspondence on Trademark Clearinghouse Strawman proposal, and then hopefully we can get some background on the reserve names issue, and that would be an added one. Any objections to proceeding like that? Marika and Mary, any suggestions on your part? Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. Maybe we can also pick up on some of the items that we had in here as the review of the work plan, and you know, make some suggested updates based on where the group currently stands, and maybe also briefly look at the deliverable 1C questions. Maybe just to touch upon, I guess, partly maybe an introduction as well to those working group members that haven't maybe been as involved or newcomers that are attending and just observing. And just maybe one note still on the item that I think that Alan and as well as Anne were talking about. Maybe that is actually one of the examples we may be looking at in the context of the implementation review team and how our decisions or changes made as part of implementation-related discussions. Well, I think here we're actually looking more at elements where indeed there was a specific request or input needed from the council. Well, I think once we get to looking at what happens at implementation and how are changes made there and what should be the process for that, maybe that is where those examples are very relevant to review in conjunction with how implementation is currently being done together with implementation review teams. Still, it doesn't prevent us to noting it here and looking at it. So, any information on that or any additional information?
Yeah, Chuck, I do have a real quick comment on that, what Marika just said, highly relevant. May I just get one quick comment in before we close?
Yes.
As we look back at what happened with Strawman Solution, the debate at that time was, is this implementation or is it policy? And so we're really at the core here of what we're talking about, because a lot about Strawman Solution was at the time certainly characterized, as implementation. There were those who thought it was implementation. And then what you just said about reserve names was that your view was that was implementation. So we're right in the heart of what the issues are here with implementation versus policy. I can recall even, Fadi's blog about which aspects of Strawman were implementation and which were not. So, as to what we delay for later versus what we put on this particular chart, I don't know, but this is at the core of implementation versus policy.
Thank you, Anne, and I see Greg agreeing with you on that. And, I think it was, at first especially, was treated as implementation, and then the question came up whether is it really all implementation. So I think you're right on target there.
Thank you.
Now, let me make a suggestion, or a request, I guess. The chairs are going to meet, just us. We're not going to have a working group meeting next week. Some people will be maybe traveling already to London if you're going to London. if you have any suggestions on agenda or certainly on this topic that can help out, please send it to the list before next Wednesday so that the chairs and co-chairs and staff have a chance to consider that in our meeting on Wednesday. Okay? And we'll keep you informed on all of that. Anything else before I adjourn?
Thank you very much.
Thanks. I think it was very productive. I think we've got a lot of things that we're going to be able to use going forward. I hope to see a lot of you in London, but if not, and you can call in, we would appreciate that for our meeting there. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. See you there. Bye.
Thanks, Chuck.